Indriya Bhavana Sutta, the development of the faculties. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying among the Kajangalas in the bamboo grove. Then the young Brahmin Uttara, a student of Parasari, went to the Blessed One and on arrival exchanged friendly greetings and courtesies. After this exchange of courteous greetings, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, the Blessed One said to him, "Uttara, does the Brahmin Parasari teach his followers the development of the faculties?" "Yes, Master Gautam, he does." "And how does he teach his followers the development of the faculties?" "There is the case where one does not see forms with the eye or hear sounds with the ear. That is how the Brahmin Parasari teaches his followers the development of the faculties." "That being the case, Uttara, then a blind person will have developed faculties and a deaf person will have developed faculties according to the world of Brahmin Parasari. For a blind person does not see forms with the eye and a deaf person does not hear sounds with the ear." So when this was said, that young Brahmin Uttara sat silent, abashed, his shoulders slumped, his head down, brooding at a loss of four words. The Blessed One noticing that Uttara was sitting silent, abashed, his shoulders slumped, his head down, brooding at a loss of four words, said to Venerable Ananda, "Ananda, the development of the faculties that the Brahmin Parasari teaches his followers is one thing. But the unexcelled development of the faculties in the discipline of a noble one is something else entirely. Now is the time, O Blessed One, now is the time, O one well gone, for the Blessed One to teach the unexcelled development of the faculties in the discipline of the noble one. Having heard the Blessed One, the monks will remember it." "In that case, Ananda, listen and pay close attention. I will speak as you say, Lord." Venerable Ananda responded to the Blessed One. The Blessed One said, "Now how, Ananda, in the discipline of a noble one, is there the unexcelled development of the faculties?" "There is the case where, when seen a form with the eye, there arises in a monk that is agreeable, that is disagreeable, what is agreeable and disagreeable. He discerns that this agreeable thing has arisen in me. This disagreeable thing, this agreeable and disagreeable thing has arisen in me, and that is compounded, gross, dependently co-arisen. But this is peaceful, this is exquisite equanimity. With that the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases, and equanimity takes its stance, just as a man with good eyes, having closed them, might open them, or having opened them, might close them. That is how quickly, how rapidly, how easily, no matter what it refers to, the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases, and equanimity takes its stance. In the discipline of a noble one, this is called the unexcelled development of the faculty with regard to forms cognizable by the ear, by the eye." So here there are three things that this agreeable is manapa, and manapa is that the Pali words over there. So when we get one of these things, then the monk will notice that I got this agreeable thing, and then he comprehend that this is sankatam olarikam paticca sampanna. Sankatam is constructed. Olarikam, whatever thing that are akusala, unskilled states, they are termed as olarika, gross ones. And dependently arises, depending on the contact, this thing arises. So, because of these things that arise, compounded, gross and dependent co-arisen, and one would go into this equanimity. The equanimity is better than any of these three things. So to understand that one, it's not that simple. This is a sort of a higher teaching over here. First, we see what will happen when we get the agreeable thing. So, as soon as the agreeable thing come to arise, this monkey is capable of understanding that it is constructed, right? It's a gross thing and dependently arising, and then going into the equanimity. So, there's a quite a lot done here with that statement. First, when we get the agreeable object, then there is this contact to be felt as pleasant. Whatever thing that we agree, like, and there is this contact to be felt as pleasant. Then the pleasant feeling arises. Depending on the pleasant feeling, we approach that object with joy. So we like that object, so we approach with joy. Therefore, lust arises. When the lust arises, the sensual desire thinking arises, kama vitakka. So this person is now thinking about that object, sensual desire thinking. Because of that one, lust-born fever arises. Now he is burning with this fever. Because of that, the constructed characteristic of arising arises. That's the upadha sankata lakkhana. The characteristics of constructed characteristic arising arises. And if there is this arising characteristics wherever in the world, that is leading to the birth. So if we get birth, what can we expect? Aging, right? Aging. So that means painfulness in change. What we get is painful. Aging means painfulness in change. So we can see there's this 10 Dhamma parts over here, starting with the agreeable object. As soon as one gets the agreeable object, he should know that this leads to viparinama dukkata, or the painfulness in change. So the first noble truth, straight away he reached out of this agreeable object. So he has contemplated up to that level before, and is very well aware that this has arisen, this is where it is leading, so no more. Now, what will happen in the disagreeable object? So there is this contact to be felt as painful. So there is painful feeling that arising, depending on the contact to be felt as painful. So then this person will approach that same object with the grief. So the approach with grief arises, domanasa pavichara. So since he approached that object with grief, then the hate arises. I don't like this. And so the ill will thinking arises. Always keep on thinking about that object, that I don't like this. And so that's the vyapada vitakka. Because I want that, I got this. So just keep on comparing and arriving at the thing. So the hate-born fever arises. When the hate-born fever arises, that the constructed characteristic, alteration that which stands arises. That is called titassa anyatattam sankata lakkana. That is, it's change. That it's like that there was a good teacher teaching me, and then teacher was transferred and there's someone else now. So I don't like this teacher, right? So because of that change, so that as soon as I see that teacher, then it's painful for me. So painfulness as pain arises. So then as soon as, so that is the most bad one out of the two, because it's, you know, when I perceive the object, I feel pain, and the end result is also painful. So the disagreeable object, that is samanapa, lead to this painfulness as pain, dukkha dukkata. And in the case of the neither agreeable nor disagreeable object, the contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant arises. So the neither painful nor pleasant feeling arises. And then this, his approach is with equanimity. This equanimity is sort of a very mundane equanimity. It's not exceeding anything else. So the delusion arises because of that one. He does not know that the impermanent nature of this thing, suffering nature. So cruelty thinking arises, vihinsa vitakka, and the delusion born fever arises. And then the constructed characteristic passing arises, that means vayasankata lakkana. So that this whole thing is now passing. It's like that I have constructed something in the past and then it's going to break. So what I have constructed is this body and it's going to die, like that. So the painfulness in constructions arises. So sankara, dukkata. So you can see all these three objects, whether they're agreeable, disagreeable, or neither agreeable nor disagreeable, what I end up with, three kind of suffering. That is actually the first noble truth. So having known that one, then that person now think that the best thing is that now he understands this is constructed, constructed by my volitional formation. And it is gross because it's, you can see it is akusal or the unskilled stage that it leads to. And this is dependently arising. Unless there was contact, there won't be any feeling or anything like that, or dependently co-arising. And he understand that this is peaceful, this is exquisite equanimity. So that means that remember that Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, for example, Buddha said that the householder has got this three kind of, you know, the pleasure, displeasure and neutral feeling that as we discuss over here. And there is this renunciation, the displeasure, pleasure and the equanimity. So Buddha is asking us to replace from these ones, the householder's one, with the renunciation tree. And in the renunciation tree, that Buddha is asking us to replace that the rather than being you know thinking about the suffering thing that have the feeling of suffering and have pleasurable feelings of the renunciation pleasure, and there is this equanimity better than the renunciation pleasure, the renunciation and the equanimity. So be there. So the monk is following that advice, having known that whatever the three kind of feeling lead me to this bad situation. So there's a big lot dumb over here to go in.
It is the same thing we can see in the Panchupadanaskandha Vedana part is the one we were describing.
Yes, yes. That's the one that is actually splitting into three kind of feelings and depending on the three kind of feeling, three kind of suffering. Either the change, alteration is there. Viparinama Dukkata. Oh, the painfulness as pain is there. Oh, the sankhara dukkata, that is this the constructions, whatever construction that are going to fail. So therefore, this the painfulness in constructions arises. So those are the three. So one should know that. One should understand that one, having contemplated before. So he, having known this one and taking the advice from the Buddha that this out of these three, the renunciation one is better, and then go into the equanimity. And Buddha said that is like the person is just closing the eye and opening the eye, like that. Very quickly he arrived at one. To arrive at quickly, one should have meditated before very heavily in that way. So similarly, Buddha said further, when hearing a sound with the ear, there arises in a monk what is agreeable, what is disagreeable, what is agreeable and disagreeable. He discerns that agreeable thing has arisen in me. This disagreeable thing, disagreeable and disagreeable thing has arisen in me. And it is compounded, gross, dependently co-arisen. Sankatam molarikam patichasamupanna. That is really good to go with that Pali word over there. And whatever thing that arises, if you remember those three words, and then you are actually thinking about those three words. When you think about those three words, then you are no more with that three kind of feelings. So, in this particular case also, the equanimity is better, the same conclusion. So, Buddha gave an example, just as a strong man might easily snap his fingers like that, and that is how quickly, how rapidly, how easily, no matter what it refers to, the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases. And equanimity takes its stance. In the discipline of a noble one, this is called unexcelled development of the faculties with regard to sounds cognizable by the ear. And similarly, Buddha said the same thing about this, the smell, smelling. So we eye and then the ear and then the smell. In that particular one also, the equanimity. And the example Buddha gave over there, just as drops of water roll off a gently sloping lotus leaf and do not remain there. And likewise, this person is able to get rid of this smelling thing, not with those three kind of feelings. And he's going to the equanimity in that. Furthermore, when tasting a flavor with the tongue, there arises in a monk what is agreeable, what is disagreeable. what is agreeable and disagreeable. He discerns that disagreeable thing has arisen in me. This disagreeable thing, disagreeable and disagreeable thing has arisen in me. And that is compounded. Gross, dependently, co-arisen. Sankatam, golarikam, parichasampan. But this is peaceful. This is exquisite equanimity. With that, the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases. And equanimity takes its stance. Just as a strong man might easily spit out a bowl of saliva gathered on the tip of his tongue, that is how quickly, how rapidly, how easily, no matter what it refers to, the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases. And equanimity takes its stance. In the disciplining of a noble one, this is called the unexcelled development of the faculties with regard to saliva flavors cognizable by the tongue. So, you can see one would have contemplated regarding the eye and the ear, the nose, the tongue, you know, the body and the mind. Otherwise, I'm good at this eye and then the feeling that is coming, arising out of that one. But then I do not know how to control the ear part. So this is the controlling, these are the controlling faculties we are talking about. There are 22 faculties, controlling faculties. We will look at it in a detail later on. And so we should be able to manage all these three faculties, control them. To control them, we should have done some sort of contemplation before regarding the sounds, regarding the smell. And the taste is a big one. Because that we eat three meals per day, right? So when you eat three meals per day, three times, you have that one, right? Before, when you are feeling hungry also, think about these flavors and things like that one. I mean, you just don't go and eat whatever thing it is, then you cook whatever thing you like to eat. And having eaten also, think about the food as well. So this is a big one in that respect. One might be sort of meditating and closing the eye for a day, but when it comes to eating, because you got to do it, and one might be failing. And this is one of the reasons that that we are bound to this world, the flavors, the rasatanna. It is a big thing. We were not thinking about this one that much until the Buddha and the Aryans telling about this one. Furthermore, when touching a tactile sensation with the body, there arises in a monk what is agreeable, what is disagreeable, what is agreeable and disagreeable. He discerns that this agreeable thing has arisen in me. This disagreeable thing, this agreeable and disagreeable thing has arisen in me. And that is compounded, gross, dependent, co-arisen. But this is peaceful, this is exquisite equanimity, with that the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases. And equanimity takes its stance. Just as a strong man might easily extend his flexed arm or flex his extended arm, that is how quickly, how rapidly, how easily, no matter what it refers to, the arising agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases. And equanimity takes its stance. In the discipline of a noble one, this is called the unexcelled development of the faculties with regard to tactile sensations cognizable by the body. Furthermore, in cognizing an idea with the intellect, that is from the mind, there arises in a monk what is agreeable, what is disagreeable, what is agreeable and disagreeable. He discerns that this agreeable thing has arisen in me. This disagreeable thing, disagreeable and disagreeable thing has arisen in me. And that is compounded, gross, dependently co-arisen. But this is peaceful. This is exquisite equanimity. With that, the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases. And equanimity takes its stance. Just as a strong man might let two or three drops of water fall into an iron pan heated all day. Slow would be falling of the drops of water, but they quickly would vanish and disappear because the iron plate is very hot. That is how quickly, how rapidly, how easy, no matter what it feels, what it refers to, the arisen agreeable thing, disagreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing ceases, and equanimity takes its stance. In the discipline of a noble one, this is called the unexcelled development of the faculties with regard to ideas cognized by the intellect, from the mind. So you can see that we were talking about eye, ear, nose, tongue and the body and the mind, right? So there are six. And within that one you can see we always go to equanimity. Whatever the feeling, we are going to equanimity. So that will actually cover 11. 11 kind of faculties itself. And there are 22. So, Vibhanga explained all these 22 faculties. The 22 control faculties are control faculty of the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind. So, there are six. Control faculty of femininity, control faculty of masculinity, control faculty of vital principle. That is this Purushendriya, Istriendriya and the Jivitendriya, faculty of life. Control faculty of pleasure, control faculty of pain. Control faculty of mental pleasure, control faculty of mental pain, control faculty of indifference, that is equanimity. Control faculty of, so now you can see that we got five over here, because physically and mentally we got two. One is painful, one is pleasurable. Mentally also you got two, and then the equanimity is both getting rid of those four. And then the control faculty of confidence, control faculty of energy, control faculty of mindfulness, control faculty of concentration. So there are five over there. That is the samadhi, wisdom, faith, effort, and the mindfulness, and then the concentration and wisdom. Control faculty of I am knowing the unknown. So this is a big one. Control faculty of knowing, control faculty of one who has, control faculty of knowing and the control faculty of one who has known fully. So, these things are sort of great ones, where first one is by attaining the stream path entry, and the second one can from the first path to Arahant path, so that one, and then the last one is for the Arahant only.
That known fully is the
Arahant. Yes, completely known fully is the Arahant. So in this book, because that this is sort of difficult to write, because it says the first faculty is some translated as, I shall come to know, not yet unknown. Whatever thing I have not known, that I will come to know. That's the first one. That is called it says initial enlightenment, that's what it says. And the middle one is intermediate enlightenment, then the final enlightenment. So they are going to refer it that too. So we know about the control faculty of the eye, you know, that these four great elements, that four great essentials in sensitive surface of the eye. So that is the control faculty of the eye.
How are we meant to try and develop them in that order, from 1 to 22? Is that a natural order?
Well, you first develop regarding these six, the six that we discussed in detail, i.e. you know, stump body, and then becoming, have the equanimity.
So not especially eye before ear, before...
Normally one is very, you know, big one. So eyes got to be started first sort of thing. And easy to control in a meditation, for example, close your eyes, so quite a lot gone. And having controlled it that way, then having known that, you know, the suffering nature that has come to arise because of that eye. If I open my eye and look at something, either pleasurable, displeasure or equanimity, that it leads to suffering unless I have the contemplation about the impermanent nature or suffering nature. Because otherwise I will grab it with or without knowing. So, this is very dangerous. And so there is this control faculty of ear, and then the similarly, the mind. And so there are six over here, which we discuss. And the control faculty of femininity, that which is a woman, is feminine appearance, feminine characteristics, feminine behavior, feminine... deportment, femininity, being feminine, this is called control faculty of femininity. And this is a dangerous one, very dangerous one. Similarly, for the men, there is this control faculty of masculinity, that which is a man, masculine. appearance, masculine characteristic, masculine behavior, masculine deportment, masculinity, mean masculine. We were not thinking about these things either. You see that if you think about the food that is tasty, right, we always think about these things. So the tongue, we are not controlling that one, right? So not having control that one, then let's say you are dying and sort of thing. And when you are going to be born, so you want this food. So that's why we born here. Right? If you don't want this food, you will be born somewhere else. So, and then how I am going to be born? In which way? As a man or a woman? Sort of thing. So Buddha said in a different discourse in Anguttara Nikaya that a woman would look at her way of life, femininity. Having looked at all those things, she will look outside and see a man. So one who don't exceed own characteristics and look outside, and then you know that they don't exceed those, and then you know both go in this direction. And similarly, a man would look at his things, you know, the man way of things, you know, the boys things are, we are boys, and so therefore we play cricket, and that's how it is. Girls think that we are so and so. So they have their own way of having got that one. Then so they make themselves that I am a woman and I am a man. So both want to behave that way. So they look outside. When they look outside, they do look at the each other. So then that this is the case that where this the ahinkara, the I making come to arise from that one. This is the basis. You are not thinking about these things before. If you look at Dhamma carefully, the Dhamma say this one. So when this arises, now let's say I'm taking that I am a man, that I have the men's behavior, men's things and all those things, having got that feeling, because of that one, there is this perception that I am, ahinkara, right? I am. So how I am. And so I'm happy with these things, and I'm proud. Ahinkara is, there's proudness as well. And being proud, right? How I became proud? Because I'm a man. So I want to be man again. So I go for that one. A woman being in such a situation, similarly, I mean, I normally take the 16-year-old girl example. One who is pretty has got this characteristic, right? I mean, this one is bad than that one, worse than that one, because it's applying without us knowing. The girl's case is sort of apparent to other people and can say that she is proud because of the beauty, right? We are proud because of that masculinity or the femininity. Amazing thing over here. And that lead back to the same thing, back to the same loop again. If you, whenever you appreciate this one, that I making is there, and coming back to the same thing. And there is this faculty of life, so there are two controlling faculties over here. And then the faculty of life, so there's this control faculty of vital principle by way of twofold division, is controlling faculty of material vital principle or controlling faculty of non-material vital principle. Regarding the matter, there is this thing. Or regarding non-matter, this Dhamma parts, there is this faculty. So this is how we get this lifespan, sanskara. There is ayu sanskara in Pali. That's how you get from this faculty. Then the controlling faculty of pleasure. So now you can see we discuss first six, i.e. an ostam body, and then there is this femininity, masculinity and vital principle. So there are nine now. And there is this controlling faculty of pleasure, that which is bodily ease. So I have a physical happiness, probably in a chair, right? Bodily ease, bodily pleasure, ease, please, and it's called sukha indriya in Pali. Experience born of bodily contact. Therein what is controlled faculty of pain, that which is bodily uneasiness. If I'm sitting down on an uncomfortable chair, that I get the bodily uneasiness. Bodily pain, uneasy, painful experience is dukkha indriya. Therein what is controlled faculty of mental pleasure? That's a somanasa, that which is mental ease, mental pleasure. Easeful, pleasant experience born of mental contact. Therein what is controlled faculty of mental pain, that which is mental uneasiness, mental pain, uneasy, painful experience born of mental contact, dhomanasa. And therein what is controlling faculty of indifference, that which is neither mental ease nor uneasiness, neither painful nor pleasant. So both gone. And so there is this equanimity. So now you can see, so first six, and there are three, that femininity and the masculinity and the jivitendri. And then there are five over here. So Buddha, in this one, Buddha started with the first six, and then asked us to go into this upekkha, last faculty. So they are gradual developments. So for example, you can't go into upekkha until you develop the first jhana. You develop the first jhana, so there is this pleasure. So you know how to get rid of the displeasure. Having obtained that one, and then go into the upekkha gradually in the fourth jhana level. So there is a huge gap.
So to go to upekkha, so you have to meditate on the pleasant feeling and the
yeah, so it is happening this way. So you first go to the first jhana concentration. That is, you leave out the sensual desires, those things, and have the renunciation, right? And the non-ill will and non-cruelty is maintained. So having maintained that one, one would reach the first jhana, and there is this, it is rapturous and pleasurable. And then, so there is this initial application and sustained application. So when you practice more, you don't need to do the initial application, sustained application, because I have done it before and many times, then it fade away, then there is this rapture without initial application, sustained application. And then after a long time, I don't like this rapture because it's like a water flowing, you know, that is troublesome. Body become tired if you have this one for a long, long time. There is this this thing. So you are happy to let go of the rapture. Let go, it's fade away. And so there is this pressure, the mental pressure. Now mental pressure one is third jhana and it is really good. And if you meditate for loving kindness for a long time, you reach this one. And so now what happens when the pressure ceases? As soon as the pressure ceases, the displeasure comes in, right? So pressure is the cessation of that one. So you would see the peril of this one, that these are all good, but when it ceases, I have the problem. So then one would prefer, let me have the equanimity. So you are happy to let go of that such pleasurable feeling. It's really good. You are happy to let it go, having seen the peril of that one. So that's how you reach that. So now, and then there is this controlled faculty of confidence, faith. That which is confidence, being confident, trust, implicit. That is about the Buddha. Then the controlled faculty of energy, effort. And then control faculty of mindfulness, control faculty of concentration, and control faculty of wisdom. So these five. So that they are big ones on their own as well. So having developed the other ones, having known Dhamma, then you get the confidence. Otherwise, you don't get the confidence about the Buddha. And then one would develop this, following through the Eightfold Path, one would develop these five. And then the last three, that is this control faculty of initial enlightenment, I shall come to know, yet unknown, that which for the realization of those states that are not known. Whatever the states that I want to realize, they are not known, not comprehended, not attained, not discerned, not realized, is wisdom, understanding, and truth investigation, right view, and path constituent. So that is the stream enterer, the one who is attaining the first path, in the stream enterer path, Sotapanna Magga, that is what it is. And then the control faculty of intermediate enlightenment, that which for the realization of those states that are known. So he knows at least one state, and then go into the further, so get the stream, fruit of stream entry, and then the once return path, once eaten fruit, and go up to the arahantship. But he didn't get the arahant, the fruit of arahantship. He get the path. So up to that level is the intermediate one. And then the final one is the that which for the realization of those states that are known fully, comprehended, attained, discerned, is realized, is the this faculty. So there are 22 faculties, and one can meditate on these things if someone is actually familiar as well. But the previous ones has to be done before, you know, how to arrive at this faith and things like that, developed before. So what? Yeah.
When you develop these faculties, in order to maintain it throughout, you have to attain it down.
Well, you got to be mindful. If to develop, first you need the dhyana.
Yeah,
having developed it, having developed that one, you don't have to attain dhyana all the time. But you got to have the wise attention. Wise attention. So. This path, fruit and sort of thing, it is through the jhana, but they quickly arrive at that, or that state. And how is one a person in training, someone following the way? So this is the normal one. And then for a trainer is that the seeker who has actually attained something. There is the case where when seeing a form with the eye, there arises in a monk, what is agreeable, what is disagreeable, what is agreeable and disagreeable. He feels horrified, humiliated, disgusted. Attiyati harayati dibuchati. With the arise an agreeable thing, agreeable and disagreeable thing. So you have heard this sabbasankaresu anicca sanya in Girimananda Sutta. That is this, over there also, this is the perception of impermanency about all the formations. So he has contemplated these things before. And whatever things that are coming up as agreeable, disagreeable, neither agreeable nor agreeable, that having contemplated all these three things lead to this suffering nature. And he knows the arising phenomena and the passing away phenomena of these things thoroughly. When he knows that he would see why would I construct anything? Because these are sankata, you know, the constructed thing. It's like a carpenter who would construct a table and then next day it is getting broken. And he would construct a table again 2 days after it is getting broken and so on. So you would see, I constructed one yesterday, it's gone, and then another one today, it's gone, and so on. Like that, we construct this body, you know, from birth, and one would see that I pass away, and then I do it from birth to birth many, many, many times. Why would I have a form just to let it die? If I know that this is thoroughly, it is the case, then one would be horrified and humiliated because this harayati, hiri, that is that what I got here, a body, right, that need to be fed. And what it does all the time, you can see these excrements comes up and the discharges coming up and so on. And what sort of thing that I have made? Why would I make this one? And then jiguchati, disgusted with the arising these things, he become humiliated about these things that he constructed.
When somebody, monks who could see, anybody who could see their previous birth and the way what happened to this birth, that was enough to humiliate oneself, isn't it?
Yeah, it is enough. I mean, you see what happened to Buddha, the Bodhisattva at that moment of enlightenment, you know, before the first quarter of that one. He look at that many, many births, that he has been born in this way, this way, this way, and by passing away, you see, that one could see. I mean, when you recall births, you are not recalling the, first you are sort of excited, you are thinking about what you are doing and all those things. After later on, when you see many, many births, you get the one sort of a picture. The picture is birth, aging, sickness and death. It's very rapid you see these things. And that's what you are looking for as well. And so you can say in this life, if you see that I was born, right, this is my aging, this is my sickness, and this is my death. So when don't have this 8 years, 50 years, or whatever the gap, you can quickly see these things, then what is this? So one get disgusted about this occurrence of doing this. Sometimes you don't even feel like looking at these birds again and again, because that's enough sort of feeling that you get. You know, it's all the same. Whatever the birth is, it is the same. So Buddha can go for animal things to, you know, all those things. Imagine that you see that you will be born as a Brahma and was there for 80,000 eons or whatever thing it is, and the next birth that you are an ant or someone, right, close to zero lifespan, and yeah.
And didn't the Buddha say that it was absolutely inconceivable how many of these we've been through? So
yes, you can't find the first point. That you were living infinitely.
Did he say it's very hard to find a being that hasn't been your mother or your father in his life? So I can't step on an ant that hasn't been my mother in a past life.
That's right.
Because we've been going around that long.
Mm. Yeah, and Buddha said in one discourse that the ants were going in a row, and Buddha said that all of them have been the world-ruling monarch. You know, world-ruling monarch has got much pleasure and all those things. You've got women treasure, elephant treasure and all those things. And he rule and then go into the divine worlds and then come back. But all of them, every one of them has been born. So when you think about it, well, we have been like that one before as well. We just can't remember. And we just have the aspiration. Some people will have aspiration to be born like one of them, right? And it's totally useless in that sense.
So Buddha could see other people's past life?
Yes. Buddha can see anyone. Yeah, he can go for... there's no limit. For example, an arahant like Venerable Sariputta, he can go for one eon. Buddha can go for... You know, there's no limit. Eons and eons can go, but still he can't finish, because it is infinity. Infinity is a, you know, is not a number. So
did he say infinite or inconceivable?
Well, the infinite, it implies infinity, because we are infinitely, you know, it's going back that.
Unless you got Nibbana, so...
If you get Nibbana, then it is...
It's always happening.
Yeah. So for one who has attained Nibbana, one would actually not trying to pursue that one. Yeah. So, similarly, when hearing a sound, the taste, tasting a flavor with the tongue, and the tactile sensation with the body... Cognizing an idea with the intellect, the eyes is in him, what is agreeable, what is disagreeable, what is agreeable and disagreeable. He feel horrified, humiliated, and disgusted with the arising agreeable things, disagreeable things, agreeable and disagreeable things. This is how one is a person in training, seeker, someone following the way. And how is one noble with developed faculties? There is the case, these are the arahants we are talking about. There is the case where, when seen in a form with the eye, there arises in a monk what is agreeable, what is disagreeable, what is agreeable and disagreeable. If he wants, he remains percipient of loathsomeness in presence of what is not loathsome. If he wants, he remains percipient of unloathsomeness in presence of what is loathsome. So, you can see excrement, he can perceive it as, not as a loathing thing. It's, other way around, unloathsomeness. And so normal beings see other beings, the beautiful ones, agreeable ones, as, not as loathsome. They don't see that loathsomeness. They see that this pleasurable and good and so on. But the arahant can contemplate is the other way around. They always do the other way around for that one. They are free. Our mind is bound, therefore we can't. Arahant's mind is free, they can turn it whatever way they like. And it's only the arahants get this knowledge. This is a sort of a psychic power as well, that this power is only for arahants. And when hearing a sound, when he get that one, if he wants, in the presence of what is loathsome and what is not cutting himself off from both, see, cutting himself both from both, he remains equanimous, alert and mindful. Upekko viharati sato sampajana. Sampajana is this, the right view, sort of there. And he got the alert and mindful and equanimous. Similarly for the sounds and taste and all the other six. So he behaves that way. This is how one is noble, one with developed faculties. So Ananda, I have taught you the unexcelled development of the faculties in the discipline of a noble one. I have taught you how one is a person in is in training. Someone following the way, I have taught you how one is a noble one with developed faculties. Whatever teacher should do, seeking the welfare of his disciple out of sympathy for them, that I have done for you. Over there are the roots of trees. Over there are empty dwellings. Practice jhana. Ananda, don't be heedless. Don't let her fall into regret. This is our message to you all. That is what Blessed One said. Gratified Venerable Ananda, delighted in Blessed One's words. This meditation can, this one can be used as a meditation, but you need to develop these things before. And when you develop your mind, using this method of control, you can develop the mind further. And that's how one would go into psychic powers with this method. This is for the higher teaching over here. This is the 152nd discourse in the middle, and say in the last one, in that one. And if you maintain for any thought the agreeable, disagreeable, and neither agreeable nor disagreeable, equanimity is maintained. Having maintained the equanimity, you can get the knowledge. That is the path to knowledge. And so all the variety powers are performed and using this one. So
how does one know that the person has psychic powers?
Well, first you try it. That person try first. When he tries, he can see.
The people nowadays, that the things that people do, like they say they have psychic powers, and you know these card things, and these are not real.
No. They are different. They are different. Mm-hmm.
No.
The card reading and sort of thing, and those psychic people. Yeah, no, that's a different. They are using some other techniques. These are pure techniques. These are coming out of the proper concentration.
So in this world now, there are people like that.
Did Sai Baba?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to talk about those things. So,
he could do
certain things. Well, people do certain things because of the other beings help them. You see, the psychic power is that is your own.
Yes.
Okay, no help from the others. So you can actually perceive things, see things, and do things on your own. These psychic powers I'm talking about, having been one can become many.
The people who does that things like that sort of a concentration, that people make some others like staying like this to this side and all these things, are these
No. Buddhists, these things are like that. You having become one, you become many, right? Mm-hmm. You can fly, go under, and go through walls. And perception. They can touch the sun and moon by hand, sort of thing. Hand means not this normal hand, yeah. Is the mind-made hand. Can see the faraway objects, other worlds, and that sort of thing. These are their own development, their own experience. It's not help from anybody else.
So there are people like that in this world now?
Yes. There are. Very rare. There are. Yes.
When Prabhupada was living, and he went to all the world, and it is by mind-made body or it is by physical?
Buddha could go in both ways.
Both ways?
Yeah, Buddha can travel by the mind-made body. Buddha can go by the physical body as well. What Buddha said that he made the mind pure, And having made the mind pure, he embed the body in the mind. And then the body become light. And then go.
Is that the way that Lord Buddha went to Sri Lanka to you?
Well, most probably yes. So those ones. I mean, Buddha might have gone there by psychic power, like a mind-made body as well, depending on that one. And there were instances.
When somebody goes with mind-made body, the others can see or it is his own?
The other divine beings, for example, they can see that you are coming and sort of thing.
It's a very fast thing, isn't it?
Very fast.
Mind is very fast.
Very quickly mind you are arriving and going there.
Taking physical body also with mind-made body.
I don't know. I mean, the Buddha can do that one and many can't do that. So, it's a big thing, I suppose.
When you are also in high concentration, you can see that some sort of strength, right?
Yeah, I can visit, travel as well. I can travel from the mind-made body, but I can see other worlds. So it's just a matter of maintaining this power, the concentration. You need to maintain the fourth jhana concentration without falling out of it. So that's the technique. So how do you do that one? This discourse is one. And then the Cheto Kila Sutta is another one that helps you to do that one in middle and say.
So how long should we do this sutra? Like in concentration, in meditation?
Well, I suppose you shouldn't sort of first try to attain these psychic powers though. You should be trying to attain Nibbana to become one stream enterer. That should be the goal. And having attained that, I would go further in that direction.
There's a lot of commitment in there, otherwise you can't do that.
To do this sort of thing. This is difficult.
Even to get to...
Probably this is a byproduct. Because, you know, actually, for example, when we look at the first six, actually, it is, you have to maintain equanimity on your eye, nose, tongue and all. These are the things, basic things, that is Panchupadanas come, when you are developing that class. It is the way we need to go for Nibbana.
Yep.
But out of that one, you get this psychic power.
As it is, but you need to develop as well. It is not automatic.
It doesn't automatically come.
It does come automatically if you have developed before. For example, there were bodhisattvas who got the divine eye element because of the meritorious things that they have done before. Buddha said in one discourse. One of the Buddhas, he mentioned that he, because of the meritorious deeds he has done before, he got the divine eye element before the enlightenment. So,
even Buddha had, right? Because
Buddha got it at that night, no?
No, before that, when he was a child, and
he had an Anapanasati.
Yeah, but in the sky. I don't know whether it's true, but I read as a child, at a festival.
Yeah, that's the Anapanasati.
He attained that Anapanasati concentration, not showing anything else, as I can.
That story was when Siddhartha was very small, meditating on a platform somewhere
in the sky.
In the sky. That is what
commentary. Yeah, but it's not in the discourse. Yeah, so that's the issue. So you need to separate the two out.
So the other thing comes out.
But why these things are said like that? Because this is something I cannot understand in this commentaries and everything. If it is not, if you don't know the truth, to say something like it's a lie. Then it comes to a lie.
Yes.
That is, it's a bad karma.
Yes.
So why do people do that? Because
even today, some doctors, for example, say that these things because then he become famous and sort of thing.
But it is very serious because a lot of the monks who have written these things in the past, isn't it?
Well, the thing is that you really do not know whether they are monks. For example, Acharya Anuruddha, who wrote the Abhidhammatha Sangha, no one knows whether he was a monk, where he was, and sort of thing. Even the Buddha Ghosa is not a monk. He did his PhD.
Mm.
So later on might have become a monk, or I do not know. So
why these things are taught to kids then? Shouldn't be done.
Well, that's how the things get corrupted. What is easy, you follow.
Maybe it is well intentioned, but still.
Buddha said that this. Yes. Buddha said whenever Mahakashyapa asked this question, how the Buddhism get destroyed, Buddha said in the future people will write things that people can't find the meaning. You know, the all those things distorted, so they can't actually see the Dhamma.
Yeah, because if you clearly see, listen or understand Sutta, so that's very pure, that it very clearly say that what you do in your sort of in words or mentally or whatever, so it makes a... there is a consequence for that, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
There is no such things like best intention or something like that. But what you do, you get that.
You have to be very careful not to destroy the Dhamma. That's the one thing. So that's why you need to follow exactly what Buddha said, not anything anybody said.
Mm.
So go through the discourses. So that's the pureness one can actually achieve by that one. If you follow commentary, I can show you how commentary, how it is wrong, where it is wrong as well.
Mm.
I know that the bad part, how it affected me as well. So I don't look at them.
So this sutta, just one more question. If we say that step one is that when I look at a form and I get, say, a pleasant and unpleasant or an indifferent feeling, I look at all of them and I see them as... impermanent, not self, and suffering. So first, anicca, anatta, and dukkha. Is that?
Yeah. Right? Well, you need to do this contemplation before. In the normal time, you close your eyes and do this contemplation before, and then you develop these perceptions of impermanence, perception of suffering, perception of not self before. Okay. Now, having developed that one, now you go for a walk. And you be very mindful, and you should know that when I go into shopping mall or somewhere, my eye will get attacked by this, you know, the village attacking dacoits. That's what Buddha said. So they are going to attack me. So I get this pleasurable one, displeasurable one. So you put effort before we are going out of the house, you put the effort, make it, you know, you become mindful and say that these things are going and coming to, you know, attack me. So I'll be prepared. So you get your weapons ready before you go there. So your weapons are, you controlling your eyes, you know, whatever thing see that I actually go looking at the flow or something. Not looking there like this, you know, looking. If I'm looking, then I find it. If I find it, what I find is the suffering. One should see, if Buddha said, if someone seeks delight in the eye, he seeks delight in suffering. So, having known that thing, one should go carefully and avoid everything. You go there and buy whatever thing you want to buy and just get out.
Is this more difficult in a shopping mall? Like it's designed to catch your eye and...
Yes. So, these days it's very difficult. You have to be very careful. Very careful.
I have found eye knows others easy, but tongue is difficult.
Tongue is the one actually creating this problem, big problem. Yeah,
very difficult.
What you can develop, the ahara particulata sanya, that is, they regarding the food, you should develop this, the perception. Think about that food, what will happen in your stomach. Put it out as vomiting, right? Look at it from the eye, ear, and from the nose, thoroughly smell it. And then you can see, you don't like it. Your nose doesn't like it. Eye doesn't like it. Ear doesn't like it. Right? And you don't like to touch it from your tongue at all. Imagine that you are doing it. And you don't like to touch it from your body either. But that things are actually inside your stomach. So now having known that one, and then the process thereafter, what is happening to that one, take it thoroughly and keep on meditating it. And when you keep on meditating about it, then next day when you are going to eat, right, and you actually mix it, that thought will come to you.
Mm.
And that one actually take out the pleasure of this thing, rasatanha, about the flavor. For the flavor, whatever the craving you have will take out. At that time you eat only for the sake of eating. This is the only way. This is the biggest one out of all these senses, I would say.
I mean, the more you develop it in during meditation, not only that, other ones too, eye, ear and all thing. So you can, in the real world, you can control yourself without getting anger, because otherwise you will get angry within yourself, trying to avoid things and trying to refuse things.
That's what you were saying. Yes.
That doesn't help. That make more harm.
Yeah. You need to be careful. I mean, as a beginner, you can't give up everything, right? I will give up a little bit, you know, the train, my mind in the meditation time. And more you think about the suffering, more you have to let it go. So that's the way to do it. And if you look at Kundalini Sutta, Buddha said that if you have the wise attention, you know, the contemplating impermanent nature, suffering nature and so on, then you get the mindfulness, sati sampajana, clear awareness and the mindfulness. And now when I see something, I am a bit careful, because I know that this thing that is coming up in front of me is going to create me trouble. Previously, I would have accepted that one. Now I know that this leads to this troublesome nature, troublesome thing. So, previously I would have grabbed it. Now I close my eyes. Right? I don't want to hear. I don't want to see sort of thing. And that Buddha said is the lead to the controlling of faculties, Indriya Sanghara, that which you are talking about over here. And the controlling of faculties lead to this three kind of good conduct. Because I am not going to grab anything, I am not going to hurt anybody, I don't have the anger feeling. So therefore, I get three kind of good conduct out of that one. I conduct from the body very, very well. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, I give up. And then the frivolous talks, lying, harsh speech, frivolous talks, slander, all give up. So mind is also controlled. Having seen something, I wouldn't grab that one. And having seen someone, I wouldn't say that let this guy be dead. And have the right view. So three kind of good conduct lead to the four foundations of mindfulness, satipatthana. Four foundations of mindfulness, when developed, lead to the seven factors of enlightenment. From the seven factors of enlightenment is the attainment. So it's all start with this this thing. So controlling faculties is very important. Very, very important. So
there's a lot of, you have to sacrifice a lot of things when you...
Yes.
Probably not.
No, you can't say, because see what happens. For a very good example, as we all are working, and think about a promotion. Why do you want a promotion? And so what happens if you don't get it? So
these nothing will happen.
No, I mean, what's a normal person's mind, when you don't develop your mind, that's what happens. You go for these things and then you don't get it, you get angry. So, and then you try to do more.
You
try to do more, what happens is you lose your time to do your meditation, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know that? Sorry.
Whatever, the answer to that question is, if you know what is the aswada and what is the adino, you will...
That's what normal person does.
And you know, Buddha said at that occasion that, so you can see, if you don't get the promotion or whatever thing it is, then there's a painful feeling persisting in the mind, right? You know the medicine for that one? To have not killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, the bodily good one, and then the sammajiva. Right livelihood. It's amazing. I can see that one now. It is really powerful. So if you have that, those two qualities developed, then you won't get that any problems about that one.
That's right, because this afternoon before I came home, because I was training one girl and she was telling me Let's see, Arjun did that. I'm the only person in this group that who hasn't got this, you know. And she is, because what I can see from her is she's every day she is with that feeling because she is working within this group all the time. And yeah. So it's
they haven't developed their mind or the body. That's what it is. Yeah. Okay, I think probably we'll stop for today then.